Hey everyone, it's Aisha popping in to let you know about a couple of exciting events I'll be a part of coming up this weekend at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin. First, I'll be leading a panel inspired by this very podcast called Pre-Woke Watching, Your Faves Are Problematic. And my amazing guests are Jeff Yang of the podcast They Call Us Bruce, Jenny Yang of Distorted Comedy, and Sam Escobar of Allure Magazine. That's going down Sunday, March 11th at 2 p.m., and it's going to be awesome. So if you're at the festival, stop by, check it out, and say hi. And if you're not, don't worry. After that panel, I'll be doing a live stream Q&A with South by Southwest via our Slate Represent Facebook page at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll have links to all of this on our show page, as always. And now, on to the show.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hey, Miss Williams, it's Papa. I mean, Stanley, giving you a call. We're standing in a feminine hygiene aisle, and I was wondering if these are for you, Keisha, or the missus. Okay, I can see how that's none of my business, but if you could just be a bit more specific, it would be helpful.
No, we're not playing too much.
The applicator, okay. Super plus and slender. Okay.
Okay, what's up?
Scented or unscented?
Yeah,
I got those.
I hear cardboard can be rough, so do you want the plastic applicator?
Yeah, I can't just shut up. Are there any other products you want? You're welcome. Bye.
You good?
So?
Oh, good, man. Let's get out of here.
God. Oh, that lady was looking at us weird.
You think she knew we were tampon shopping?
Hey, y'all. This is Represent, and I'm Aisha Harris. Back in January, Emmy-winning writer-actor Lena Waithe, who rose to fame playing Denise on Master of None, debuted her very own show, The Chi, on Showtime. It's set in Lena's home city of the Chicago South Side, and it's a slow-paced drama that follows the lives of various characters as their paths intersect, chronicling the rampant violence, yes. The first episode begins with the murder of a young man, but also the quieter moments, block parties, school plays, dates. It also has an impressive roster of talent, including Mudbound's Jason Mitchell, The Wire's Sanja Sohn, and Moonlight's Alex Hibbert. So now heading into the final stretch of the first season, we figured it'd be a good time to take a closer look at how the show has unfolded and its depiction of the often derided city at its center. So joining me today is Chicago native Jasmine Sanders, who has been recapping The Chi for Vulture. Welcome to the show, Jasmine.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And where are you exactly? Are you in Chicago? Do you live in Chicago?
Yeah. I'm a Chicago native. I'm on the South Side in a neighborhood called Washington Park, which is like right next to Hyde Park, which is the neighborhood everyone knows because of the former president.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, I didn't want to talk about the show without having someone who actually knows Chicago, because it just, this show, you know, as you've mentioned in your recaps, one of the things that Lena Waithe, the creator, has talked about is the fact that she really wants to sort of give her city, her home city, the respect that it deserves, or the humanizing that it deserves. And reading your recaps, I was interesting to see how much of what you said resonated with me as someone who is not from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do have Chicago roots.
Oh, cool.
My dad grew up outside of Chicago, and I went to Northwestern. So, like, mm-hmm. I'm familiar with it. I've been there, but obviously I'm not from there. And so just even, like, the little minutia mm-hmm. of the things that you point out, like the fact that much of it is filmed on the West Side instead of the actual South Side where it's supposed to take place, and how you can notice these landmarks in the background that someone like myself would not be able to notice
right.
offhand, I think is really useful. So I want to talk about, as of this recording, as of the time this episode will be released, it'll actually be 8 episodes in. I think there will be 10 episodes total.
Yeah.
So we're almost done with the show. First, let's talk about how you started with the show, like what your thoughts were on its depiction of Chicago, and the fact that one of the things I found really interesting and that I commented on myself when I was watching it was the fact that this was a show with barely any female characters, at least in the first
right.
episode, and the female characters are sort of relegated to the mm-hmm. side. You've written a lot about that. So talk a little bit about the way you can approach the show and where you think it's evolving, you think it's evolved as of this point.
For sure. That was definitely my first, like, and most consistent frustration with The Chi was not only the lack of female characters, because if you think about it, every major male character has, like, a female corollary, right? So there's, like, Brandon, who's the main character. He has a girlfriend and a mom. And then Kugi has a mom, who was his younger brother, who was killed off. And then Kevin, and he has a mom. So I was really annoyed that all of the female characters sort of only existed as extensions to the men. And even outside of that, the ways that they were portrayed were just really, really irksome to me initially. When they were there, I noted this in my review a couple of weeks ago, but none of them ever have any time, like, by themselves. Mm-hmm. They only exist, like, in relation to the male characters. And they often have lines or plot lines, which just feels so stilted or cliche to me a lot, especially in their responses and the things that they say. So episode two began, I believe it was episode two, began with a party, and Emmett's girlfriend, Keisha, starts this, like, basically like a Love and Hip Hop-esque, like, finger snapping, neck rolling, I'ma kill you fight with another girl over this guy.
Yeah.
And it was just, The Chi does that a lot to me. It's kind of a wasted opportunity, because a party scene is such an opportunity into, like, the interiority of characters, you know, like, you get to see where they live, what their houses look like, what they dance like, anything like that, like, things that are really important to understanding or feeling like a character is real. And it felt like Lena or the directors of that episode kind of squandered that opportunity.
Right. And it's interesting to me that this is a show created by Lena Waithe. She is not she didn't write all the episodes. She wrote, I believe, she's credited on the first episode and also a couple more. But, you know, she's not the only one who's involved with this, but it is her show. She is the face that's being put out there. But before we go any further, it's probably helpful to clarify who some of these characters are within the show.
Yeah.
And if listeners can't tell already, we are going to be spoiling a lot, because this is the type of show where you can't really talk about it without spoiling. And it's, you know, we're already 8 episodes in. So if you don't want to be spoiled, right, then stop listening and wait until you've caught up with the show.
Yeah.
But for now, so essentially it's basically an ensemble piece, and we have a lot of characters happening here. The first episode is kind of sets the tone for the rest of the series, wherein it starts off with a murder of a young black man named Jason and another character named Kugi, who we've already mentioned. He comes upon the body and while he's, like, walking around, and he winds up stealing a chain off of his body.
Right.
Now, this leads to the detectives kind of coming upon him. He gets singled out. And it turns out that the young black man who has been killed, another character named Ronnie, is sort of like the father figure of that kid, and is very distraught and upset. And so the mother the actual mother of the kid who's been killed tells him, you have to go. You have to make this right. Whoever killed him, who killed my son. This is, like, kind of getting into the weeds. But essentially what happens is that he finds out, or he suspects, that Kugi, who took the chain off of him, took the chain off of his son, is the one who actually killed him. And he seeks revenge and winds up killing Kugi. Now, Kugi is the brother of Brandon, who is played by Jason Mitchell of Mudbound. And Brandon is kind of, he's the kid who's kind of found his way, not out of the hood because he's still there, but he's trying to make something of himself. He hasn't gotten into gangs, or he doesn't have kids. He's like a straight and narrow guy who is an aspiring chef, and he's working in this nice restaurant in the gentrified part of Chicago. And we have these kind of main characters. There's also other characters who get involved. There's Kevin, who is played by Alex Hibbert. And we have Alex Hibbert is from Moonlight, the little boy, the youngest version of the three actors who play the lead character in Moonlight.
Baby Chiron.
Yes, Baby Chiron. And so there's a lot that's happening, but we have all of these characters. Plus, I haven't even mentioned, and this is how sprawling the show is, and the comparisons to The Wire, which have been many, I think, are fairly accurate, at least in this case. You also have Emmett, who is played by Jacob Lattimore. And Emmett is kind of the dude who's like not into the gangs or the drug life, but he is like unable to wrap it up and keep his dick in his pants. He has like three different kids. And in the first episode, one of the mothers of his kids just shows up and says, here, you're going to take him for a while. And he's like never had like more than a few minutes with the kid. And so he winds up having to take on father responsibilities, and it's a mess. So we have all of these things happening. But as you said, the women are very much on the sidelines, which is interesting to me because this is, it's a show from a, created by a woman, by a queer woman at that. And it takes a really long time for us to get to the point where we're seeing the women, some of the women act, as you said, outside of being directly linked to the men in their lives, and even seeing a queer representation of female characters. So, yeah, it's, I don't know, it's really interesting to me to see that. Now, how have you felt about this evolution that we've seen? One of the things I thought was very notable was you pointed out, and I kind of felt the same way, where when we finally see that there is a queer family or queer characters, they're Kevin, the younger boy, his mom, it turns out, is, you know, in a relationship with another woman. And we see their family life, but it's very Cosby-esque. It's very sort of picture perfect, except they're queer. And you had an interesting point about that.
I thought it was an interesting addition to have, you know, Kevin have two moms or have the addition of a queer female character. But I also couldn't help but feel like it was kind of the most sterilized. And basically, they are a straight couple, except one of them's a woman. You know what I mean? Like, they have, Kevin's one of the more, I guess, fortunate of the children depicted in the show. He's not like his friend Jake, who doesn't have parents, and who's, as we see in recent episodes, has kind of started to veer down the wrong path and get into a life of crime, like, super early. And I did feel like it was very Cosby-esque, like, to have the queer representation be, you know, these two women who are, I'm assuming, married and, like, have two kids, two pretty, what they believe are very well-behaved kids, was an interesting choice to me. And also to not have them be affectionate, or I don't want to say sexual, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like I needed them to be that, but it's interesting that the show has them be, like, a very, like, barely affectionate.
Right. Well, I mean, even Claire and Cliff were very affectionate on the Cosby Show. And I think part of the reason why we haven't seen that is because they just also haven't had any, I think, save for that one scene, maybe we've seen them together once.
Right. It's, like, the most painless representation of, like, queerness that you could have. You know what I mean? Like, these women are, like, a little bit older, and it feels like they're working in opposite, which is kind of thing about The Shy a lot, is that they're working in opposition of stereotypes, but in doing that, you're still acknowledging the stereotype, and by working in opposite of it, you've kind of created, you've worked into, like, what a similarly circumscribed space. If that makes sense.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I want to talk a little bit more about those stereotypes. And one that has really, I will say that I've actually felt like the show, and based on your recapping, I think you would agree that the show has gotten stronger as it's gone on. But one aspect that has really made me uncomfortable, which you really talked about really well, I think, was the character of Maisha, who is one of Kevin's schoolmates. She's a bigger girl. She's basically, like, I mean, for lack of a better word, she is precious in a way where she, like, embodies all the things that Black women are not supposed to, like, be, or she's, like, the very not attractive, you know, content, I'm putting that in quotes, but, like, she's the not attractive girl who, like, of course Kevin's not gonna like her. But, like, instead of exploring that, like, what it must feel like to be considered that by people and to be going through adolescence like that, we see her being very aggressive and with him, and she has a crush on Kevin.
Yes.
And she at one point basically kind of assaults, like sexually assaults him in a way. She like pins him to the ground and licks his face, which, you know, if this was reversed and it was a bigger boy doing that to a little girl, we would think like, whoa, what's happening here? And here it seems like it's being played in a way for laughs that feels really uncomfortable.
It is. The development of the Maiyusha character was one of the most off-putting and like discomforting aspects of the season to me, because she's treated like, I thought she reminded me a lot of Debo, but I guess like Precious is like a more like,
oh, Debo from Friday?
From Friday, yeah, because it was just such a bike, and she was just such a, they made her a bully, which I actually thought there were aspects of it that were funny, like the fact that she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she like kind of said, you know, this is against my religion, but, and I thought there were moments where that could have been comedic, but the handling of the character was like really irresponsible to me, in that, because they're, it's not clarified what age Kevin and his cohort are, but they're children of an age where they have like romantic desires, right? Like they have crushes on each other. They have really funny banter about girls and dating. And so they're obviously of an age where they're dating or at least harboring crushes on girls. But, or on each other, but the fact that Maiyusha's romantic desires for Kevin were treated as fodder, they were treated as comedic, was something that made me so sad and so uncomfortable. You know, sort of the fact that it was played for laughs that she had a crush on him. And the moments where she got like really sexually aggressive with him, like when she looked his face, or the next episode, she like tried to force him to kiss her. It made me so uncomfortable because it's like, I don't know if the show is aware of what it was doing, which is, this is making me think now, this is a girl who's like acting out sexually what may have been done to her, especially when they finally show her home life, right?
Right.
So yeah, it was just, that character was so uncomfortable for me to watch, and especially the first time she appears where she tackles him in the park and, you know, she asks him, she like softens and asks him, do you like my hair? And it's like, like what little black girl has that thought or that desire for a boy to think your hair was pretty? And Kevin's just like cowering underneath her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the handling of the character did so many things, accomplished so many like negative things in the show. Like it's the first time I've ever seen or felt like disdain for Alex Hibbert. You know what I mean? Like it's like the most charming child I've ever seen in a movie. And his responses, or the way that he responded to Maiyusha, really, really angered me and made me dislike him as a character, if that makes sense.
I would completely agree, and it's I mean, it's not like he's been around that long, but like he's just so adorable, and to have that those words and those actions be like, that's what he's supposed
and,
to
like, do. He threatens to hit her, which is again supposed to be funny because she's like physically imposing and she's bullying him pretty aggressively at that point, but I really wish that character either would have been done away with or something different should have been done with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I feel like we've talked a lot about like what doesn't work, and there's a lot more we could easily talk about. But what has worked for you? Do you feel as though the show is heading in a somewhat satisfying direction for at least one or a few of the characters?
Yeah, I do. I feel like what works is when the characters are allowed, like the group dynamics between boys and men is one of the things that the show handles really well to me. I love seeing the banter between Kevin, Jake, and Papa, the younger boys, and also Ronnie's, almost all of the male characters that Ronnie interacts with, from Meldrick, who's the really eccentric criminal who sort of resides with sometimes. Meldrick's really funny. Ron's two sidekicks are really funny. When Emmett is allowed to interact with other people, he has like a really funny rapport. And so I think that the show, if it allows itself, can be really, really, when it allows itself to be funny, it is. And when it focuses on the dynamics between the men, it's really, really good. It's kind of like a buddy comedy.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, just because I think when it was first announced that Lena Waithe was going to be doing the show, most of us knew her from she helped produce Dear White People, but she also, is Master of None. That's like what she's known for. And those are both, they're smart. They have serious moments, but they are largely also comedies, satires. And so the fact that the comedy, I think, I agree with you, works best. Kind of speaks to, when this show premiered, I think a lot of us, myself included, were like, "Whoa, this is way more serious than I thought it was going to be." Like this, right. I wasn't expecting The Wire, because that's what it felt like. I completely agree. I loved especially the scenes between Brandon and his cousin.
Yeah.
I forget his cousin's name.
Hannibal.
Yes, Hannibal. The two of them together, they just have a really good, they have that cousin rapport that, you can kind of just shoot the shit and you catch up, and like you may not see each other for a while, but then like they come back, they've always got your back.
Yeah.
And there's especially the scene where in the most recent episode or the one before it, where Brandon visits Hannibal at his place, and there's a man living in a closet basically, and they just had a really good dynamic there. I think those are the great moments, and I would just love to see a show with Kevin, aka Baby Chiron, and his friends. Like I think it was really great, and I appreciated in the latest episode where they were trying to sort of, him and Papa were staging an intervention for Jake.
Mm-hmm.
It was really sweet to me because, like, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that before on screen. And so seeing these two boys be like, "Jake, are you okay? We don't want you to get into that stuff. Like, don't do that." And I just thought it was really sweet and cute. And I could see an entire series like that, being really interesting to watch.
Hey, Verilyn jumping in to add how much I also really love the relationship between Kevin, Jake, and Papa. Papa actually is my favorite part of the show. And, Jasmine, one thing you brought up in your review of episode 7 is you took issue with Kevin and Jake jumping back into regular childhood activities like going to the skate party or, being in the play after dealing with quote-unquote adult trauma. And I actually really like seeing that play out, because even as adults, we're experiencing traumas or even vicarious traumas when we watch videos online of someone getting brutalized or killed. And then, we're just expected to like go off to work and be productive.
Well, I think what Jasmine was talking about in her recap is that it's not so much that they shouldn't be in the play, but like you don't really see them dealing with he literally shot someone, and he's not, you don't really see him dealing with that, what it means to have done that outside of when he breaks down in Brandon's arms in that one scene. And then, when he's obviously trying to get Jake to not get involved. But like, we don't really see him wrestle with it outside of that.
Yeah. I honestly thought that was a testament to how unwieldy the cast of characters has become. Like, the show had, I believe it was 1 week where it pulled away from the boys and they weren't featured in a week's episode, but it was like a week felt like forever, because when they showed up again, it was like, oh, we're just picking, they're like back in the play and back, Kevin's back trying to like woo his crush. And it just felt like the show doesn't have enough time to focus on all of the characters adequately and all of their storylines. And that was, again, the point where I thought, like, Detective Cruz needs to go, or, like,
oh, my God, that detective needs to go. I just can't with him.
The detective needs to go.
Yeah, I guess, like, just thinking about the world and just, like, we're all kind of doing that all the time, and I kind of think that we were supposed to do that work of thinking about the fact, like, wow, he's like doing a play. I remember there was a moment where they actually ran into the play because the guy that's like limping all the time is like looking for them at the school, right?
Ronnie.
Yeah. So it kind of becomes a question, like, they are dealing with it. We just don't see them dealing with it in a vulnerable way. And like, how many of us don't deal with our stuff all the time anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to step back a bit before we, you know, before we wrap this up, as someone from Chicago and, you know, with Lena's sort of manifesto that she wanted to humanize and sort of focus on the Black male plight in Chicago, I mean, what are your thoughts on other representations of Chicago on in film and TV? Like, where do you think The Chi falls within those other examples? I mean, the example I can think of most at this moment is Chi-Raq, just because that was such a polarizing movie and it was made by someone who wasn't from Chicago. So there was a lot of things like that. But, you know, how do you feel that The Chi stands? Like, does this feel like a better representation than other things you've seen?
Yeah, I think it's definitely better than Chi-Raq. That's like the standard. But I remember when the show first came on, like when it premiered, and Chief Keith gave it his stamp of approval. He was like, this is a million times better than Chi-Raq. So, yeah, I do think it's a lot better. I do want more. Like when I think about current series set in Chicago, they're all about the emergency responders, right? Like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Medicine, some episodes of Law and Order. You know, I felt like, and The Chi has a producer who actually works on Chicago PD, I believe. And so some episodes felt to me like a cop drama. Like I felt like it had started to focus on the cop subplot way too much.
I really don't like the plot, the cop side plot.
I don't like it at all. So, I think that it's a direction. It's a step in the right direction. But ultimately, I'd like to see more. Like, I always want to see more. Like, there's so much art here. There's so many artists. There's so many poets and writers. And, we also had Brown Girls recently, which was set in Tilson, a neighborhood here in Chicago. Yeah.
How can I forget about Brown Girls? We had both of those, the creator and the director on here.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
I really love Brown Girls. So, I just like to see more, and I do want more, like, specifically about the South Side. So I would say, like, I feel like The Chi is a step in the right direction, but I always want more.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, with... I guess my concern is that, and you've made this point in your recaps, is that, like, does the show feel overly burdened by representation or the need to be this sort of counterpoint to the Black male Chicago narrative? Like, would you prefer to see a show that, I mean, it's one thing to show the reality of what's happening, but it's another, like, I remember Verily and I were talking about the first episode, and she was like, you know, the first thing she said, I don't want to see another Black mom crying over her child in, like, in the morgue or whatever. And I thought, actually, she's right. we do always see that.
Or another Black funeral.
Right, or another Black funeral. It's you know, I guess the question becomes, how do you balance showing the reality and then also show the more slices of life that don't involve all of that? Because it's not always about that, even if you are living in Chicago.
I think that I do feel like the show is overburdened by its politics a lot. And I was initially concerned, like, last year when Lena had begun doing interviews and like press for the show. And she would repeat that, you know, I want this show to humanize Black boys on the South Side of Chicago. And that just gave me pause, because I was like, well, how do you humanize someone? Like, that sounds like it's going to be really, like, we're venturing, like, really close to it being trauma porn. And The Chi has felt like that to me a lot. And it also begs the question of, like, who are you talking to? Like, who doesn't think of Black boys on the South Side of Chicago as human? And what do you feel like you need to do to change that perception? So mm-hmm. I do believe that the show, it's really, really burdened by what it feels its political message is. And that's like when that's what it is at its most frustrating. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the show frustrates me incredibly when you can tell what the lesson is supposed to be in this episode, or you can tell what this character is supposed to represent. And so I think it's hard to navigate feeling like you have a cultural responsibility to the city that you're from. As I think like I feel the same, and lots of us feel the same, but you also, it's so easy to fall into a trap of just being so concerned with politics, being so concerned with changing people's minds that's what the primary function of the show has been. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I'm so glad you said all of that. And I think that's where we will leave it. I encourage people to check the show out. If any of this sounded interesting and you haven't been watching it, I do think it is very, it's a fascinating ensemble study, character study.
And
I'll be curious to see where it goes from here. And it's airing on Showtime on Sunday nights. And I think there's maybe two more episodes. And Jasmine, where can folks find you and your work?
You can find me on Twitter always. I'm at Jazz Money Records. I know it's horrible, but that's what I am.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jasmine. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you. You too.
And that's all we have for today. Now, Verilyn is actually back at this very moment with me in the studio here.
Hello.
And we have a bit of an announcement to make before we say goodbye.
Don't worry, no one is leaving.
No. But we are going to be taking a little bit of a break in the coming weeks, just because we are going to bring something a little new to you all.
Yeah, and what, you know, we have something cooking up, and we just need the space to kind of work through it. It'll be a bit of a new direction, but don't worry. Trust us. You'll love it.
Yes. And we'll still occasionally be dropping some episodes. So don't delete us from your feeds.
If something big happens, you know, of course, if Viola wants to reach out to us, we're going to talk to Viola Davis. Like, that's the thing that's going to happen.
Right. So we might pop up from time to time, and we'll definitely let you all know via social media and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But we're going to take a little bit of a break. We will be back. We don't know how long it will be, but it won't be for too long.
Absolutely.
So we're looking forward to that, and we're looking forward to bringing you all something fresh and new when we fully return.
Yes.
Represent is produced by the lovely, awesome Verilyn Williams. Our excellent social media assistant is Marissa Martinelli, and our intro-outro music is performed by the sweet San Francisco funk soul band Midtown Social. And again, make sure you check me out at South by Southwest if you're in town. Until next time.